my husband said to me, "One sees plainly that you never lose the presence of God." The world, seeing I quit it, persecuted and turned me into ridicule. I was its entertainment and the subject of its fables. It could not bear that a woman, scarce 20 years of age, should thus make war against it and overcome. My mother-in-law took part with the world and blamed me for not doing many things that in her heart she would have been highly offended had I done them. I was as one lost and alone. So little communion had I with the creature, farther than necessity required. I seemed to experience literally those words of Paul, "I live yet, no more I, but Christ liveth in me." His operations were so powerful, so sweet, and so secret altogether that I could not express them. We went into the country on some business. Oh, what unutterable communications did I there experience in retirement. I was insatiable for prayer. I rose at 4 o'clock in the morning to pray. I went very far to the church, which was so situated that the coach could not come to it. There was a steep hill to go down and another to ascend. All that cost me nothing. I had such a longing desire to meet with my God as my only good, who on his part was graciously forward to give himself to his poor creature and for it to do even visible miracles. Such as saw me lead a life so very different from the women of the world said I was a fool. They attributed it to stupidity. Sometimes they said, "What can all this mean? Some people think this lady has parts, but nothing of them appears." If I went into company, often I could not speak. So much was I engaged within, so inward with the Lord, as not to attend to anything else. If any near me spoke, I heard nothing. I generally took one with me, that this might not appear. I took some work to hide under that appearance the real employ of my heart. When I was alone, the work dropped out of my hand. I wanted to persuade a relation of my husband's to practice prayer. She thought me a fool for depriving myself of all the amusements of the age. But the Lord opened her eyes to make her despise them. I could have wished to teach all the world to love God and thought it depended only on them to feel what I felt. The Lord made use of my thinking to gain many souls to himself. The good Father I have spoken of, who was the instrument of my conversion, made me acquainted with Genevieve Granger, prioress of the Benedictines, one of the greatest servants of God of her time. She proved of very great service to me. My confessor, who had told everyone that I was a saint before, when so full of miseries and so far from the condition to which the Lord in his mercy had now brought me, seeing I placed a confidence in the Father of whom I have spoken, and that I steered in a road which was unknown to him, declared openly against me. The monks of his order persecuted me much. They even preached publicly against me as a person under a delusion. My husband and mother-in-law, who till now had been indifferent about this confessor, then joined him and ordered me to leave off prayer and the exercise of piety. That I could not do. There was carried on a conversation within me very different from that which passed without. I did what I could to hinder it from appearing, but could not. The presence of so great a master manifested itself, even on my countenance. That pained my husband, he sometimes told me. I did what I could to hinder it from being noticed, but was not able completely to hide it. I was so much inwardly occupied that I knew not what I ate. I made as if I ate some kinds of meat, though I did not take any. This deep inward attention suffered me scarcely to see or hear anything. I still continued to use many severe mortifications and austerities. They did not in the least diminish the freshness of my countenance. I had often grievous fits of sickness and no consolation in life, except in the practice of prayer and in seeing Mother Granger. How dear did these cost me, especially the former. Is this esteeming the cross as I ought? Should I not rather say that prayer to me was recompensed with the cross with prayer? Inseparable gifts united in my heart and life. When your eternal light arose in my soul, how perfectly it reconciled me and made you the object of my love. From the moment I received thee, I have never been free from the cross, nor it seems without prayer, though for a long time I thought myself deprived thereof, which exceedingly augmented my afflictions. My confessor at first exerted his efforts to hinder me from practicing prayer and from seeing Mother Granger. He violently stirred up my husband and mother-in-law to hinder me from praying. The method they took was to watch me from morning till night. I dared not go out from my mother-in-law's room or from my husband's bedside. Sometimes I carried my work to the window under a pretense of seeing better, in order to relieve myself with some moment's repose. They came to watch me very closely to see if I did not pray instead of working. When my husband and mother-in-law played cards, if I did turn toward the fire, they watched to see if I continued my work or shut my eyes. If they observed I closed them, they would be in a fury against me for several hours. What is most strange, when my husband went out, having some days of health, he would not allow me to pray in his absence. He marked my work, and sometimes, after he was just gone out, returning immediately, if he found me in prayer, he would be in a rage. In vain, I said, "Surely, sir, what matters it what I do when you are absent, if I be assiduous in attending you when you are present?" That would not satisfy him. He insisted that I should no more pray in his absence than in his presence. I believe there is hardly a torment equal to that of being ardently drawn to retirement and not having it in one's power to be retired. Oh, my God, the war they raised to hinder me from loving thee did but augment my love. While they were striving to prevent my addresses to thee, thou drewest me into an inexpressible silence. The more they labored to separate me from thee, the more closely didst thou unite me to thyself. The flame of thy love was kindled and kept up by everything that was done to extinguish it. Often through compliance I played at piquet with my husband. At such times I was even more interiorly attracted than if I had been at church. I was scarce able to contain the fire which burned in my soul, which had all the fervor of what men call love, but nothing of its impetuosity. The more ardent, the more peaceable it was. This fire gained strength from everything that was done to suppress it, and the spirit of prayer was nourished and increased from their contrivances and endeavors to disallow me any time for practicing it. I loved without considering a motive or reason for loving. Nothing passed in my head, but much in the innermost recesses of my soul. I thought not about any recompense, gift, or favor which he could bestow or I receive. The well-beloved was himself the only object which attracted my heart. I could not contemplate his attributes. I knew nothing else but to love and to suffer. Ignorance, more truly learned than any science of the doctors, since it taught me so well, Jesus Christ crucified, and brought me to be in love with his holy cross. I could then have wished to die, in order to be inseparably united to him who so powerfully attracted my heart. As all is passed in the will, the imagination, and the understanding being absorbed in it, I knew not what to say, having never read or heard of such a state as I experienced. I dreaded delusion and feared that all was not right, for before this I had known nothing of the operations of God in souls. I had only read St. Francis de Sales, Damas of Kempis, The Spiritual Combat, and the Holy Scriptures. I was quite a stranger to those spiritual books wherein such states are described. Then all those amusements and pleasures that are prized and esteemed appeared to me dull and insipid. I wondered how it could be that I had ever enjoyed them. And indeed, since that time, I could never find any satisfaction or enjoyment out of God. I have sometimes been unfaithful enough to find it. I was not astonished that martyrs gave their lives for Jesus Christ. I thought them happy and sighed after their privilege of suffering for Him. I so esteemed the cross that my greatest trouble was the want of suffering as much as my heart thirsted for. This respect and esteem for the cross continually increased. Afterward, I lost the sensible relish and enjoyment, yet the love and esteem no more left me than the cross itself. Indeed, it has ever been my faithful companion, changing and augmenting in proportion to the changes and dispositions of my inward state. O blessed cross, thou hast never quitted me since I surrendered myself to my divine crucified master. I still hope that thou wilt never abandon me. So eager was I for the cross that I endeavored to make myself feel the utmost rigor of every mortification. This only served to awaken my desire for suffering and to show me that it is God alone that can prepare and send crosses suitable to a soul that thirsts for a following of His sufferings and a conformity to His death. The more my state of prayer augmented, my desire of suffering grew stronger as the full weight of heavy crosses from every side came thundering upon me. The peculiar property of this prayer of the heart is to give a strong faith. Mine was without limits, as was also my resignation to God and my confidence in Him, my love of His will and of the order of His providence over me. I was very timorous before, but now feared nothing. It is in such a case that one feels the efficacy of these words: "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Matthew 11:30. Chapter 13. I had a secret desire given me from that time to be wholly devoted to the disposal of my God. Let that be what it would. I said, "What couldst thou demand of me that I would not willingly offer thee? Oh, spare me not." The cross and humiliations were represented to my mind in the most frightful colors, but this deterred me not. I yielded myself up as willing, and indeed our Lord seemed to accept of my sacrifice, for His divine providence furnished me incessantly with occasions and opportunities for putting it to the test. I had difficulty to say vocal prayers I had been used to repeat. As soon as I opened my lips to pronounce them, the love of God seized me strongly. I was swallowed up in a profound silence and an inexpressible peace. I made fresh attempts, but still in vain. I began again and again, but could not go on. I had never before heard of such a state. I knew not what to do. My inability increased because my love to the Lord was growing more strong, more violent, and more overpowering. There was made in me, without the sound of words, a continual prayer. It seemed to me to be the prayer of our Lord Jesus Christ Himself, a prayer of the Word, which is made by the Spirit. According to St. Paul, it asketh for us that which is good, perfect, and conformable to the will of God. Romans 8:26-27. My domestic crosses continued. I was prevented from seeing or even writing to Mrs. Granger. My very going to divine service or the sacrament were a source of woeful offenses. The only amusement I had left me was the visiting and attending the sick poor and performing the lowest offices for them. My prayer time began to be exceedingly distressing. I compelled myself to continue at it, though deprived of all comfort and consolation. When I was not employed therein, I felt an ardent desire and longing for it. I suffered inexpressible anguish in my mind and endeavored with the severest inflictions of corporeal austerities to mitigate and divert it, but in vain. I found no more that enlivening vigor which had hitherto carried me on with great swiftness. I seemed to myself to be like those young brides who find a great deal of difficulty to lay aside their self-love and to follow their husbands to the war. I relapsed into a vain complacency and fondness for myself. My propensity to pride and vanity, which seemed quite dead while I was so filled with love of God, now showed itself again and gave me severe exercise. This made me lament the exterior beauty of my person and pray to God incessantly that he would remove from me that obstacle and make me ugly. I could even have wished to be deaf, blind, and dumb, that nothing might divert me from my love of God. I set out on a journey, which we had then to make, and I appeared more than ever like those lamps which emit a glimmering flash when they are just on the point of extinguishing. Alas, how many snares were laid in my way! I met them at every step. I even committed infidelities through unwatchfulness. O my Lord, with what rigor didst thou punish them! A useless glance was checked as a sin. How many tears did those inadvertent faults cost me, through a weak compliance and even against my will! Thou knowest that thy rigor exercised after my slips was not the motive of those tears which I shed. With what pleasure would I have suffered the most rigorous severity to have been cured of my infidelity? To what severe chastisement did I not condemn myself? Sometimes thou didst treat me like a father who pities the child and caresses it after its involuntary faults. How often didst thou make me sensible of thy love towards me, notwithstanding my blemishes? It was the sweetness of this love after my falls which caused my greatest pain. For the more the amiableness of thy love was extended to me, the more inconsolable was I for having departed ever so little from thee. When I had let some inadvertence escape me, I found thee ready to receive me. I have often cried out, O my Lord, is it possible thou canst be so gracious to such an offender, and so indulgent to my faults, so propitious to one who has wandered astray from thee by vain compliances and an unworthy fondness for frivolous objects? Yet no sooner do I return than I find thee waiting with open arms ready to receive me.
Sinner, hast thou any reason to complain of God? If there yet remains in thee any justice, confess the truth, and admit that it is owing to thyself if thou goest wrong, that in departing from him thou disobeyest his call. When thou returnest, he is ready to receive thee, and if thou returnest not, he makes use of the most engaging motives to win thee. Yet thou turnest a deaf ear to his voice, thou wilt not hear him. Thou sayest he speaks not to thee, though he calls loudly. It is therefore only because thou daily rebellest and art growing daily more and more deaf to the voice. When I was in Paris and the clergy saw me so young, they appeared astonished. Those to whom I opened my state told me that I could never enough thank God for the graces conferred on me, that if I knew them I should be amazed at them, and that if I were not faithful, I should be the most ungrateful of all creatures. Some declared that they never knew any woman whom God held so closely and in so great a purity of conscience. I believe what rendered it so was the continual care thou hadst over me, O my God, making me feel thy presence even as thou hast promised it to us in thy gospel. If a man love me, my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. John 14:23. The continual experience of thy presence in me was what preserved me. I became deeply assured of what the prophet had said, "Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain." Psalm 127:1. Thou, O my love, wert my faithful keeper, who didst defend my heart against all sorts of enemies, preventing the least faults or correcting them when vivacity had occasioned their being committed. But alas, when thou didst cease to watch for me or left me to myself, how weak was I, and how easily did my enemies prevail over me. Let others ascribe their victory to their own fidelity. As for me, I shall never attribute them to anything else than thy paternal care. I have too often experienced to my cost what I should be without thee, to presume in the least on